be defeated, because if it succeeds, it's going to throw 14 million people off of health care, deny food assistance to millions more, and really make this country a less fair and just place with painful consequences for many millions of Americans.
And Rob, what do you advise, what does Public Citizen advise as the what Americans concerned about what is happening should be doing today?
Well, this is not happening as fast as it may seem. The reconciliation thing, this tax and budget bill, it's going to take months to get sorted out as the Republicans fight among themselves over tax breaks for whom or how vicious they want to be with their health care cuts. So there's an opportunity for people to mobilize. So all the regular things of calling and emailing your members of Congress make a difference. And that's true if you've got a Democratic member of Congress or a Republican member of Congress. There are going to be big national mobilizations around this. There's going to be a big national mobilization under the banner of No Kings on June 14th. Those things, turning people out on the street, they've stopped the last effort in the first Trump administration to slash health care, and they can do it again this time. If we put enough people on the streets, put enough pressure on Congress, it will make a difference on this one.
June 14th is the day there'll be a military parade in Washington, costing something like $20 million, President Trump's 79th birthday.
Same day.
That does it for our show. Rob Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen. Special thanks to Ariel Goodman. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Yeah, but I'm a choice for top. I'll call this take four, insert one. All right.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, everybody. This is Michael Van Cleek, Vice President of KBOO's Board of Directors. The KBOO Board is recruiting new directors. KBOO's Nominating Committee is holding virtual information sessions from now through June. All KBOO members are eligible for board election. Black, Indigenous, and people of color are especially encouraged to apply. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plans and represents the interests and visions of our members. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/board recruiting, all one word. Thank you for considering board service for KBOO Community Radio.
Camp KBOO is now in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership drive now through June 29th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and support a summer of memories together.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Jewish-Palestinian Alliance of Oregon, presenting a benefit concert for the people of Gaza on Friday, May 30th at the First Unitarian Church. All proceeds will support the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, which provides medical care to children from Palestine, as well as direct aid to Gaza. Tickets and info at jpao.org/events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon legislators have an opportunity to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package, which would provide basic supports to immigrant families.
Governor Tina Kotek's office is looking to enact a tougher retail ban on plastic bags.
And Robert F. Kennedy threatens science journals.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 28th, 2025. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Ray Bodwell. Immigrant rights advocates are calling on Oregon legislators to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. The suite of bills would guarantee immigrant families access to housing, food, legal representation, and other supports. KBOO's Ali Rudin has more on the story.
Coalition of over 100 community organizations is urging Oregon's lawmakers to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. It's in response to increasing federal threats to immigrant communities, including cuts to food assistance and deportations. The package includes five bills that would provide Oregon's immigrant families access to things like food and housing assistance, disaster relief, and legal representation. Oregon Worker Relief Coalition President Martha Sonato says that the legislation will benefit all Oregonians.
what community has put forward is a package of very impactful cost-saving investments. And these are all basic rights that really help families stay together and succeed.
Opponents to some of the measures argue it's unfair to ask legal residents to fund benefits for people in the country illegally. Supporters, however, counter that undocumented Oregonians contribute over $350 million annually in state and local taxes, making them deserving of these benefits. From the package, Sonato highlights a bill to create a farmworker disaster relief fund. She says Oregon farmworkers, over 60% of which are immigrants, face lost wages due to extreme weather like heat waves and wildfires.
Farmworker disaster relief would really help make sure that farmworkers are able to take care of themselves and their families, just like they're taking care of all of us.
Another bill in the package, Food for All Oregonians, would provide food benefits to all children in the state, regardless of their immigration status. The measures also seek funding to renew a legal aid program for immigrants, which Sonato says is crucial in today's climate.
This policy ensures that folks have due process by providing legal representation to immigrants that are seeking to adjust their status and facing deportation.
Sonato stresses that investments in immigrant communities now will save the state money in emergency food, housing, and medical resources down the road. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Allie Rudin.
Beginning in 2027, Oregon Senate Bill 551, currently on its way to Governor Kotek's desk, will prevent retailers and restaurants from offering any form of plastic bags to customers. A bill passed in 2019 already bans the use of most single-use plastic bags, but left open the option that stores could offer slightly thicker plastic bags that are considered reusable. SB 551 removes that loophole, making bags made of recycled paper the only option for stores and restaurants. Grocers will still be able to offer plastic bags for bulk goods, raw meat, and some other items. Senator Jeanine Solomon of Hillsborough, the bill's central champion, said, quote, Senate Bill 551 gets us one step closer to our goals of zero waste and breaking free from plastic. An earlier version of the bill barred restaurants from giving customers plastic utensils or single-serving condiments in plastic packaging unless they were requested. It also blocked hotels and Airbnb providers from giving guests shampoo and other products in single-use plastic containers. But those provisions were dropped in order to get the bill passed. Celeste Mefren-Swango, State Director of Environment Oregon, said, quote, while I am disappointed to see the two sections of this bill removed, this is still a big win for the environment, and especially in removing plastic waste from our coastal communities, end quote.
King Charles warns Canada of attacks on democracy. Britain's ambassador to the U.S. says allies must work together, and the GOP's budget plan severely impacts the arts. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
I've always had the greatest admiration for Canada's unique identity, which is recognized across the world for bravery and sacrifice in defense of national values.
Speaking before Canada's parliament, the UK's King Charles says the country faces a critical moment and must defend its democracy and sovereignty. In a speech written by the Prime Minister's office, Charles did not directly cite President Donald Trump's hope to make Canada part of the US. On Tuesday, Trump said Canada can either pay $61 billion to be covered by his proposed Golden Dome missile defense system or be covered for free as the 51st state. Unlike the northern neighbor, many in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. have worked feverishly to become states. Some in D.C. statehood movement now say the district should become part of Maryland to get voting representation in Congress. While they say it's not ideal for residents, they point to Trump's threats to overturn the district's local government and run the city himself. America's growing isolationism may have benefits, according to Peter Mendelsohn, the British ambassador to the United States. He credits Trump's acute political instinct for identifying global trends in the U.S. and abroad. He says countries can't risk economic fragmentation but must come together to reboot transatlantic alliances.
We need to devote an enormous amount of energy and goodwill to preserve, sustain, and deepen the alliances which exist between like-minded countries.
Meanwhile, NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies will close at the end of May. More than 100 people working for NASA, Columbia University, and as contractor employees are being forced out as part of the Trump administration's efforts to cut federal spending. Matt Biggs with the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers notes some members of Congress want to keep the facility open. He says it would take congressional action or the courts, and says even those would have uncertain results.
We're dealing with a rogue and lawless administration. They seem to turn a blind eye to Congress. Like I said, this facility is funded. It's funded in an appropriations bill. It's funded through the NASA funding.
In the latest White House budget, NASA would lose a quarter of its funding, which cuts support for scientific research. But NASA's lease at the Goddard Institute is locked in, and moving out early would likely cost taxpayers around $3 million a year. A federal judge is rejecting Trump's moves to punish the huge law firm WilmerHale. This is the third court setback for the White House in battles with large law firms, although some negotiated deals. Groups championing the arts are criticizing Trump's budget for killing programs like the National Endowment for the Arts, even after canceling more than $25 million in grants for things like arts education. Veronica Alvarez is with the nonprofit Create CA.
The four C's of 21st century job skills, critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity, all of those skills are developed and supported by the arts. Unfortunately, usually when there's constraint of the budgets in terms of education, the arts have often been the first ones cut.
The president has also called for the Department of Education to be abolished, and his budget proposal ends programs to help migrant students and English language learners. The White House says those promote bilingualism and attract undocumented people to the U.S. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacific Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
May is Women's Health Month, and in 2025, public health officials are sharing heightened concerns about alcohol misuse among women. This includes recommended guidelines for alcohol consumption, health risks linked to excessive drinking, and options for intervening. Mike Moen has more.
Women's Health Month is winding down, and public health officials in Minnesota are joining the chorus of professionals warning about the prevalence of alcohol misuse and the added health risks for women. Problem drinking among women is on the rise, according to the National Institutes of Health. When compared to men, women have had larger increases in alcohol-related ER visits, hospitalizations, and deaths in the past two decades. University of Minnesota epidemiologist Toba Nelson says men still drink more, but agrees it's a pressing issue for women. He notes the significant health consequences if they develop a problem.
A real concern for younger women when alcohol is involved, the risks for interpersonal violence are very significant. Also, injuries related to falling, that is certainly a concern as one ages.
And according to federal health agencies, frequent alcohol consumption is also linked to a greater chance of developing breast cancer. It's recommended that adult women of legal drinking age limit their alcohol intake to one drink or fewer each day. The NIH website, Rethinking Drinking, has information on signs of a problem and how to manage and respond to these situations. For broader prevention work, Nelson encourages bars, restaurants, and policymakers to embrace effective strategies.
Responsible beverage service training in places that serve alcohol, and also restrictions on alcohol outlet density.
He's referring to limits on approving the number of liquor stores and similar outlets in a given area. United Healthcare's Dr. Lisa Saul points to how alcohol is marketed toward women these days.
Terminology like it's wine o'clock, mommy juice, those sorts of things have really normalized the consumption of alcohol in ways that we didn't really see before.
This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
While some layoffs at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health have been reversed, the agency's mining program is still expected to lose 150 researchers next month. Data shows that mining-related deaths are on the rise this year. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
Loss of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health mining program will reverse decades of progress in preventing disease, injury, and death among miners, experts say. Around 150 researchers are expected to be laid off next month, effectively shuttering the program. The agency's research labs are conducting studies that can't easily be replicated, explains Steve Shafrick, associate professor of mine engineering at the University of Kentucky. He adds the labs contain specialized equipment aimed at reducing hazards miners are exposed to.
Facilities for trying to reduce the noise of equipment so that workers aren't exposed to that level of noise all day, every day. That's a pretty difficult task, and you need to have very specific research equipment to do that.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says layoffs are part of an effort to combine numerous agencies under the umbrella of the new Administration for a Healthy America. According to federal data, around 1 out of 5 of the nation's operating coal mines are located in Kentucky. Shafrick points out the program's worker safety materials are used by mining industries around the world.
NIOSH has put a big emphasis on generating capacity within the academic institutions for replenishment of the researchers who can go out and work both in academia and in industry, regulatory bodies, and in government research.
He says the shutdown also leaves an uncertain future for grants and contracts needed to recruit new researchers.
While we are looking to get more critical mineral production inside of the United States, to be coupling that with the reduction of the health and safety research program is, I don't understand the reasoning behind that.
He also notes the program's closure will affect other industries such as mineral production. According to the Mine Safety and Health Administration, 10 minor fatalities occurred between January 3rd and March 5th of this year, more than triple the number from the same period last year. This is Nadia Romligon for Kentucky News Connection.
A group of tribes want the U.S. government to explain how it historically funded boarding schools for indigenous children. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of tribes want the U.S. government to explain how it historically funded Indian boarding schools. As Jimmy Romo reports for the Mountain West News Bureau, the tribes recently filed a lawsuit aiming to force the country to reckon with the past.
The Wichita and affiliated tribes of Oklahoma, along with the Washoe tribe of Nevada and California, filed a lawsuit in Pennsylvania Federal District Court. It seeks to hold U.S. agencies responsible for the Indian boarding school system. Native children suffered horrific abuse and neglect in these schools, and many never made it home. According to the complaint, boarding school operations were funded by Native Nations Trust Funds. Those funds contained proceeds from the sale of tribal land, land that the U.S. government forced tribes to sign away. The trust, plaintiffs say, was meant for the collective benefit of Native Nations. It is estimated that the government used $23 billion in today's money to run the boarding schools. The tribes are asking the courts to force the U.S. to give a breakdown of how the funds were used. The U.S. government has yet to respond to the complaint.
That was Jimmy Romo reporting. The Apache Stronghold, a coalition of Apache people, other Native people, and their allies say the group's fight will continue to protect Oak Flat in Arizona. This after the U.S. Supreme Court Tuesday declined to hear the group's lawsuit, Apache Stronghold versus United States. The case seeks to stop the government from transferring Oak Flat, a sacred site to Apache and other Native people, to Resolution Copper, which plans to turn the site into a mining crater. In a statement, Dr. Winsler Nosey Sr. of Apache Stronghold said they'll never stop fighting and that nothing will deter them from protecting Oak Flat from destruction. He goes on to say while the decision is a heavy blow, their struggle is far from over, and they're urging action from Congress while they press forward in the courts. Resolution Copper welcomed the decision and in a statement said the mine is vital to securing America's energy future, infrastructure needs, and national defense with a domestic supply of copper and other minerals, and says the project will create jobs and boost the economy. Attorneys for the Apache Stronghold say they'll continue to do everything in their power to ensure the Apaches can continue worshiping at Oak Flat as they have for generations. The FBI says it will add resources in 10 states, including New Mexico, to tackle unresolved crimes, with a focus on those related to missing and murdered indigenous people. But not everyone is convinced it will have a significant impact. More from Roz Brown.
The FBI has said 60 agents will be deployed to Albuquerque to investigate unsolved crimes. Tribal attorney Darlene Gomez has spent her career advocating for missing and murdered indigenous women. When it comes to investigations, she says accountability can be lacking.
When the Department of Justice or President Trump enact legislation or special task force, we very rarely see any of the data that comes out of what those task force were supposed to accomplish.
Prior to the FBI announcement, the Trump administration scrubbed an online report from the Not Invisible Act Commission, mandated by bipartisan legislation and signed into law by President Donald Trump during his first term. Gomez has a friend who's been missing for 24 years, so she's encouraged. New Mexico recently adopted the Turquoise Alert, a system to help locate missing indigenous people, similar to an Amber Alert for missing children, and already operational in California, Colorado, and Washington. Nonetheless, Gomez worries New Mexico is backsliding on its commitment to locate the missing.
I feel like New Mexico was once the premier state in the country working on murdered, missing indigenous women and relative topics, and we were making huge, significant strides. And now we are down at the bottom again.
I'm Roz Brown.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO. We'll meet interim KBOO News Director Hanna Francis and talk with station manager Nathan Van Diver about a minor flood at the studio. At 6, it's The Underground, produced by KBOO's own Youth Collective. Tonight's episode is 2 hours long with the theme Radio Roulette. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow, there's a 50% chance of rain and a high of 69. Today in history, in 2008, the Constituent Assembly of Nepal formally declares Nepal a republic, ending the 240-year reign of the Shah dynasty. The quote of the day is from British writer Ian Fleming, who said, quote, "Those whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make bored."
The Republican-controlled Congress is moving forward with budget plans that would extend and enhance tax cuts prioritized by the White House. Safety net programs would be overhauled to offset lost government revenue, and in some cases, programs would be shifted to state governments. Mike Moen speaks to an expert in South Dakota about the potential impact.
A budget plan taking shape in Congress is getting attention for tax cuts and reductions for safety net programs. Policy experts in South Dakota also track what changes would mean for state government spending. The GOP-led proposal cleared the House this week by a slim margin, with all eyes now on the Senate for action there. Programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, would be overhauled to offset proposed tax cut extensions. Advocates say new work requirements would reduce access to benefits, and states would have to absorb more program costs. And the University of South Dakota's Ed Garish says there's a key factor to consider.
The states, of course, have a balanced budget requirement, whereas the federal government does not. So the overall package that was passed will add trillions to the national deficit and debt. The federal government can do that, but states can't.
This means that if states have to contribute more to cover SNAP but don't have the money, their budgets would have to be cut elsewhere. Garish says it depends on the state, but he predicts South Dakota would simply reduce the scope of its SNAP program. South Dakota just passed a budget slightly smaller than the previous spending plan, due partly to dwindling sales tax revenue. There's also proposed Medicaid changes, and the Congressional Budget Office says several million people could lose health coverage over time. Garish says if those people were to file for bankruptcy because of unpaid medical bills, the state would likely have more court expenses on its hands.
So that's what we saw prior to the Affordable Care Act, was high levels of medical bankruptcies. And I expect we'll see a higher level of medical bankruptcies here in the next, it's not going to wind through immediately, right? But it might be 3 or 4 years.
Some provisions wouldn't take effect until at least 2026. With the sunset date looming, backers of extending and expanding tax cuts from 2017 cite urgency in generating economic activity. Garish says that could help with South Dakota's sales tax collections, but he notes these moves largely prevent income taxes from increasing again. Provisions that would enhance tax cuts are mostly temporary. This is Mike Moen for Greater Dakota News Service.
On Tuesday, a judge denied a request to throw out a lawsuit that alleges Elon Musk and Doge are illegally taking power in the government. In February, 14 states jointly filed a lawsuit through their attorney generals accusing Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency of constitutional violations. U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan ruled Tuesday that as president, Trump cannot participate in the case. the states alleged that Trump violated the Appointments Clause of the Constitution by allowing Musk and Doge to carry out mass federal firings, terminate grants and contracts, and access sensitive government data without the approval of Congress. The states requested a hold on Musk's access to sensitive information and firing power while the case is open, but the judge did not allow that. Lawyers of the government and Elon Musk himself allege that he is not in charge of Doge, even though he has made it publicly known that he is. Musk has seemingly taken a step back from Doge to focus on SpaceX and Tesla. Musk says he is disappointed in the big, beautiful bill for putting the U.S. trillions more in debt and has complained to CBS News about it.
Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. threatened to stop government scientists from publishing their work in major medical journals this week. This appears to be part of his escalating war on institutions he says are influenced by pharmaceutical companies. Kennedy said the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, aka JAMA, and The Lancet, three of the most influential and prestigious medical journals in the world, were, quote, corrupt and published studies funded by and approved by pharmaceutical companies. Kennedy said, quote, unless those journals change dramatically, we are going to stop NIH scientists from publishing in them, and we're going to create our own journals in-house, end quote. The NIH, or National Institute of Health, is the world's largest funder of health research. Kennedy recently pushed forward a White House report that says overprescribed medications could be driving a rise in chronic disease in children. That report suggests the influence from the pharmaceutical industry has kept doctors and scientists from studying the causes of chronic disease. Both JAMA and the NEJM recently received letters from the Department of Justice looking for partisanship. Kennedy's stance does conflict with that of his NIH director, Jay Bhattacharya, who recently said he supports academic freedom, which, quote, means I can send my paper out even if my bosses disagree with me, end quote.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio has ordered all U.S. embassies and consulates to temporarily suspend scheduling new student visa interviews. The Trump administration is planning to make vetting an applicant's social media postings part of the student visa application. The State Department's orders do not specify what the expanded social media screening will look for, although it alludes to President Donald Trump's executive orders aimed at combating terrorism and anti-Semitism. Aaron Reichland Melnick of the American Immigration Council said, quote, if the United States stops taking foreign students, the economic impact would be catastrophic, end quote. Figures from the Association of International Educators show that non-citizen students studying at U.S. colleges and universities contributed over $43 billion to the nation's economy and supported 370,000 jobs during the 2023-24 academic year. Trump recently banned Harvard from having international students, which currently make up around 27% of that school's enrollment.
Carbon pollution isn't just changing Earth. It could cause crowding in space. MIT scientists have found that changes to the atmosphere are enabling space junk to stay in orbit longer. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As people burn fossil fuels, carbon dioxide is building up in the atmosphere, warming the Earth and making it harder to operate satellites in low Earth orbit. As these satellites travel around, hundreds of miles from Earth's surface, they dodge millions of pieces of debris.
Objects that have been created from explosions, collisions, and even just old defunct satellites and rocket bodies that have been abandoned.
Will Parker, a PhD candidate at MIT, says much of this space trash eventually falls out of orbit because the atmosphere exerts a drag force that slows objects down. But rising levels of CO2 are causing the part of the atmosphere where these satellites operate to become less dense, which reduces drag. So space junk will stay in orbit longer, the atmosphere will get more crowded, and satellites' risk of collisions will grow. In a recent study, Parker's team found that by 2100, the number of satellites that can safely operate across hundreds of miles of low Earth orbit could be reduced by as much as 50% or more.
this is concerning because we rely on low Earth orbit for all sorts of things, for communications, for internet, weather forecasting.
So changes in space will affect everyday life on Earth. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael thinks America should have a president, not a pimp in chief.
To paraphrase Donovan, first there is a tariff, then there is no tariff, then there is. Most of the world is wondering, how did this insane child become president? And the answer is either some psychic evil from another universe whose powers are unknown, or America is falling apart and ripe for the plucking. Donnie Trump, America's pimp. Actually, his own pimp, since for the moment, he is America. He represents every one of us, hated or not. America isn't trustworthy. America doesn't honor old alliances. America keeps changing its mind. America thinks it's the only thing on TV. America is selfish, an exclusive club. America demands everything for nothing. In Trump terms, very few of us living in America are Americans. Maybe the top 1% of the top 1%. America has been stolen, bought and sold many times, and there's more for sale than ever. My country, not no more, pretty soon we'll all be poor. Or maybe not. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 28th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Ali Rudin, and Dan Raphael. The producer and engineer is Hannah Francis. Special thanks to Mike Moen, Antonia Gonzalez, Nadia Romlagon, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Ray Bodwell. All of our KBOO programming, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news from the Boo, your look inside KBOO.